Thank you, Christopher. And now we'll hear our morning scripture reading.
Verses 15 through 22. If another member of the church sins against you, go and point out the fault when the two of you are alone. If the member listens to you, you have regained that one. But if you are not listened to, take one or two others along with you, so that every word may be confirmed by the evidence of two or three witnesses. If the member refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if the offender refuses to listen even to the church, let such a one be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector. Truly I tell you, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Again, truly I tell you, if two of you agree on earth about anything you ask, it will be done for you by my Father in heaven. For where two or three are gathered in my name, I am there among them. Then Peter came and said to him, Lord, if another member of the church sins against me, how often should I forgive? As many as seven times? Jesus said to him, not seven times, but I tell you, 77 times.
Thank you, Bill. Well, I don't know about you, but I think for many of us, this teaching can easily make us nervous and a little uncomfortable. It can sound like three steps to how you kick somebody out of the church family, which is not something any of us really want to consider. It's certainly talking about conflict and even inappropriate behaviors or problems that can happen in the community, about someone sinning against us, not something any of us like to think about or deal with. And this passage talks about dealing with those kind of problems directly, first one-to-one, then by seeking mediation, and then finally, if necessary, by bringing the problem before the whole community. This is hard stuff, and not anything we want to think about. We probably all got our painful memories and scars from dealing with just these kind of challenges in our personal lives or in our church life. And none of us want to be on either side of this kind of situation. We don't want to be the one who feels like we probably should go and try to deal with someone that we feel has sinned against us. And we don't want to be the one getting confronted. Frankly, for most of us, the last thing we want to think about right now is dealing with more conflict than all the conflicts that are swirling around us in our community and our nation. So let's admit, at face value, this teaching doesn't sound like good news. Most of you expect are like me, and you would really like some good news this morning. Right now, it feels like there's not a lot of good news in the world around us. There is so much conflict and chaos, so much unrest and uncertainty, so much fear and anger, and as Judd said, the fear that it's going to get worse. So we gather here together to worship, and we want good news. We want helpful, encouraging, hopeful news. And our community and our world needs good news. This teaching, as Matthew writes, is talking about conflicts within the church, the spiritual community. But I hope, as we hear it today, we can allow ourselves to hear what it might have to say as we deal with all the different conflicts we're confronting right now. Because I think there is good news here for us. There really is. I think the first good news is simply that differences and conflicts are natural. Differences, diversity, variety are essential to all of God's creation. That's the way God made things to be. Differences and the conflicts they can cause are normal. They are part of life. They're part of any relationships that matter. And they're certainly part of any community that is in any way a real community. They are not a sign of failures on our part. As good church people, We often just want to keep everything nice. We want to make sure everybody's happy. And we often are tempted to sort of, you know, push the differences and the conflicts under and not deal with them. I think that's part of what this passage is speaking to. In fact, conflicts are actually important signs of honesty and intimacy, proof that real relationships are happening. But how we respond to them, that is the test. That is the challenge to our maturity and our love, because we so quickly get afraid, and then we get defensive and reactive. We throw up walls. We get locked into our arguments. We only take in what confirms our biases. We see that happening everywhere right now, don't we? But we all know. We all know when and if we can stay open, when we can try to understand the other person and hear their perspective, and when we're able to express our own feelings without attacking or condemning, then growth can happen. Trust and deeper intimacy can happen. Community and communion can happen. And so the first step, which is really not even spoken here, is to be honest with ourselves and admit when we feel hurt or angry or disrespected, to be honest about what we are feeling. And then Jesus said, we are to try to communicate, to go to the other person one-to-one and try to talk and try to listen. The listening's often the hardest part, isn't it? We all know this can be really hard work. And we may not be able to do it one-to-one. We may need help. So Jesus said, ask for help. Reach out to wise mediators, people you respect, people who can help you listen and respect and express feelings and thoughts, people who will not take sides, people who hold both parties in love and respect. And he says, sometimes you may need the whole community to try to find a way for reconciliation. The whole community is called to be the larger container, the safe space where differences and disagreements can, by the power of the Spirit, be held together in love. The larger community can call us to a larger vision, a larger sense of purpose, where our differences may be held together within the whole. That's something about what we're talking about when we say in our core values, nurturing and inclusive, but hold that with our Baptist freedoms, freedoms of soul, Bible freedom, church, religious freedom. Differences and inclusion can work together. But it's interesting, isn't it, that both Jesus and Matthew allow that there may be situations where you just can't figure out how to find reconciliation. Sometimes individual people do have to accept their differences and part ways. I don't think this statement, let such a one be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector, means let them be condemned to hell as an awful person. One commentator I read suggests that this is a call to see that person as someone needing loving outreach, as someone needing to be treated as Jesus treated Gentiles and tax collectors. Eugene Peterson, in his translation of the Message, says of this verse, if that one won't listen to the church, then you'll have to start all over again from scratch, confronting them with the need for repentance and offering again God's forgiving love. But to me, I actually hear this verse more as a recognition that there are limits to my ability to embody God's love. There are people that we just sometimes have to let go of. We have to surrender them to God's love and care and move on. Sometimes the best we can do is let it be. Maybe someday, sometime later, reconciliation will be possible. But to keep trying to force understanding keep trying to force the dialogue can at times do more damage than good. But I think this applies more to individuals, maybe small groups. I mean, how many different forms of Protestant church are there? And yet there is the larger, the large community, the church universal, that holds within it all these different ways of being church. And within our country, there needs to be a larger vision, a larger sense that we are all Americans, the United States of America, with all our differences, held within a larger vision. I think in this teaching, Jesus challenged us with the good news that we have the capacity to work with our differences and our conflicts, to learn and grow from them. But he also held up our responsibility and our power to hear each other, to speak honestly with each other, to try to work things through, and to become more than we could be if we only spend our time with people who see the world like us and think like us. It's challenging right now, isn't it? It's really difficult. And I think behind these teachings, we have to hear that what is so essential is the attitude with which we approach our differences and our conflict. Jesus' teaching is that we have to approach a problem, a conflict, knowing and remembering that this is someone we are called to love and care about. This is our brother and sister, a member of our community. Clearly, as Matthew shared this teaching, it was directed toward conflicts within a church. But we know that Jesus taught us in many places that it's not just those inside our own particular church community who are our brothers and sisters. He taught us that everyone is our neighbor. Over and over again, Jesus expanded the circle. He widened the scope of who is in our community. Who is our sister? Who is our brother? Who is our neighbor? Jesus calls us to open up, to embrace the stranger, the foreigner, the one who does not believe or think like us, and to understand that we are all one family, one community. So Jesus calls us to live into difficult, challenging work of finding ways to build bridges with those that it feels like are sinning against us. The work of building pathways of reconciliation with those who make us most angry and most afraid. We are called to be partners in God's reconciling work of love and grace, and to keep seeking to build community that can be a safe place, a large enough space that our differences can be held together in love. We are living in terribly divisive, frightening times in many ways, and most of us do fear that it may get much worse before it gets better. It's hard not to be afraid of that. But everyone around us, no matter what they think and what they believe and who they want to vote for, is all trying to get through this same difficult time. Some of them have huge differences with us. Some of them will not agree with us on many, many things. But our faith calls us to see all of them as brothers and sisters, all part of the family. They are our neighbors. Our faith calls us to look for what we hold in common. All of us children of God, all of us creatures living on this planet, all of us citizens of this nation. And sometimes all we can see that we hold in common is that we're all anxious and afraid. So sometimes maybe that's where we have to start. We all want to get through this. We all want things to be better, at least for ourselves and those we love. We have to say, it seems like some folks have a hard time widening their circle beyond their little group. But we're called to see wider than that. And other people again and again we see them, in spite of great injury and personal pain, are speaking out from a place of grace and love. We see the Spirit of God in them. We feel the power of love in them. I was struck by the words of Julia Jackson, the mother of Jacob Blake, who was shot 7 times by the officer in Kenosha. She said these words last week: "As I have been praying for my son's healing, physically, emotionally, and spiritually, I have also been praying, even before this, for the healing of our country. We are the United States. Have we been united? Do you understand what's going to happen if we fall? Because a house that is against each other cannot stand. To all police officers, I'm praying for you and your families. To all citizens, my black and brown sisters and brothers, I'm praying for you. Everybody, let's use our hearts, our love, and our intelligence to work together to show the rest of the world how humans are supposed to treat each other. America is great when we behave greatly." She's a witness. There are many witnesses speaking out, living into the power of love. And we are given that power, the power of God's Spirit and God's love. And we are called to participate in God's work of reconciliation and community building. What you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. What you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. If two of you agree on earth about anything you ask, it will be done. We are partners with God in the work of reconciliation. God cannot do this alone. God cannot make peace alone. God cannot make forgiveness and reconciliation happen without our participation. We have free will. We can choose to say no. We can harden our hearts against certain of our neighbors. God will not coerce our love. 2 weeks ago, Tony and I were part of a wisdom school where one of the ideas Cynthia Bourgeau introduced was that our prayer, our meditation, our simple breathing can be a form of spiritual dialysis. We breathe in the pain and hurt of the world, and we breathe out love. It's a spiritual practice. It's a work that we must do from a centered place of knowing we are held in God's love and peace. But it's a work you can do sitting in your own house when you can't go out and protest and you can't figure out how to change what's happening. We can pray, and our prayer is literally a spiritual dialysis helping purify the world. As we live in love, as we practice forgiveness, as we practice letting go, as we are able, with God's help, to loose our anger and fear, as we are able to seek forgiveness, seeking it 70 times 7, and then watching the news might mean we have to do that multiple times every day. As we let our hearts be bound more closely to God's heart and to each other, the fruits of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control radiate out from our lives. Our world needs those fruits so much right now. And whenever just 2 or 3 of us can get together, can agree together, whenever we join in love by our spirits, then the Spirit of Christ is right here among us. It doesn't take physical connecting. We are joined together right now, and the Spirit of Christ is joining us, is with each of us, no matter where we are in our own places right now. As we join in love, Christ is among us, and we bring heaven to earth. We bring the kingdom to reality. We create the realm of God's love and grace. In this difficult time, Our loving makes a difference. Our spiritual efforts, no matter how small they may seem, matter to the world. What we do, how we respond, our love works for the healing and the wholeness of our country and our world.